Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to an emergency episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that woke up to a million messages across a million platforms about how the Supreme Court had crapped the bed. So we're going to get into that. I'm Imani Ganti.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewire.news is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
This morning, the Supreme Court decided to take June Medical Services versus Gee. That's the case out of Louisiana that we mentioned in our Big Bad Abortion preview episode a couple of weeks ago.
And in this emergency podcast, we are going to explain why this is such a big deal that the court decided to take the case.
And we're also going to explain why it's very likely a bad deal that the court decided to take this case.
Oh, so bad. I'm so sweaty. I got to change a shirt already, Imani.
It's too early to be this sweaty. So what is this case, Jess? Let's just talk to our listeners about why this case is a very big and likely a very bad deal.
Sure. So the case is June Medical Services versus Gee, and it involves a challenge to a Louisiana admitting privileges law that is basically identical, like identical to the I's and T's, identical to the one the Roberts Court struck down as unconstitutional just 3 years ago in Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstedt. It's a big deal because this is the first big abortion rights case since the court ruled on Whole Woman's Health and since Brett Kavanaugh joined the bench.
And it's a bad deal, very likely, because the court should not even have taken this case in the first place. The Center for Reproductive Rights, which are the lawyers that are suing on behalf of the abortion providers who brought this lawsuit, they asked for a summary reversal, which means they asked the court to just look at the case, say, nah, bitch, and send it back to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, because there's literally no reason why just 3 years after hearing Whole Woman's Health, the court should hear another case involving an identical law. Literally identical.
How identical, Imani? How
like,
identical?
So fucking identical that like I don't even know what to say. It's like they're like congenital twins. Identical.
The congenital twins of abortion rights restrictions. This is amazing.
Exactly. I mean,
but it is. We had TJ2, one of the attorneys, on to describe just how identical it is, right? It requires providers to maintain admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of where the abortion is performed. Supreme Court had already said, yeah, no, you can't do that. That's an undue burden.
Exactly. And so the fact that the court took the case instead of just reversing it and telling the Fifth Circuit to fuck off means that the court actually wants to hear from Louisiana as to why its literally identical law should be upheld where Texas's was not.
And that means the broad application of Holman's Health as precedent is threatened. It also means that the facts of abortion access and the undue burden analysis, Imani, will differ from state to state. Like, what?
Which undue burden analysis
is different in Arkansas than Texas? How?
It's
what?
Wild. I mean, okay, first of all, the undue burden analysis, for those of you who don't have that sort of terminology right on the tip of your brain, that's the Planned Parenthood versus Casey analysis, right? That's the analysis that says, that looks at an abortion restriction and says, is this restriction an undue burden on the right to obtain an abortion, right? Does it place a substantial obstacle in front of a pregnant person who is trying to obtain an abortion? The fact that that analysis might be different in different states is just bananas, because the court likes broad applications of laws to apply the same laws to all of the states. So the idea that we're going to now have this patchwork abortion access regulation is just ridiculous. It's absurd to me.
And especially, it fundamentally strips away the idea of fundamental federal rights, right? If it's different in one state than the other, then there's no federal baseline. So that's one potential big fucking problem with this case. Another is that if the court goes sideways in it, it means in some states, an admitting privileges law may be constitutional, even if it's exactly the same as the one that the court struck down in Whole Woman's Health. So we could have an instance where courts are saying, you know what, the admitting privileges law in Wisconsin is unconstitutional, but the admitting privileges law in Louisiana and Texas, which is the same exact one, is hunky-dory. Explain that to me.
That's not the way the law works. I mean, the whole point of federal law is, again, a broad application. So if you go to one state, you're going to be facing the same laws as if you go to another state. We can't have this patchwork system of laws where only with abortion, because we don't like abortion, it's icky and gross, we're going to micromanage it down to the state level. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
It doesn't. And, you know, we've been covering the fight over admitting privileges laws. We've been covering this case in particular. We've had several podcast episodes on it. And we've spent a lot of time talking about how Act 620, the Louisiana admitting privileges law, is identical to the one that the court struck down in Whole Woman's Health, the Texas law. But the court did something else today also, didn't it? It decided to take the Louisiana petition on third party standing. So the court said that it is going to also hear arguments as to whether or not doctors and clinics can sue to block abortion restrictions on behalf of their patients. And this, listeners, please sit down. This is some radical stuff. Like, the idea.
You can say bullshit, Jess. I'm verklempt.
I'm like trying not to use all my swear words before 10 o'clock in the vortex. Like, it's so early and I'm so upset. But the reality is, like, this is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. Providers have been for decades suing to block restrictions on behalf of their patients, and the courts have said that is just fine. And now the conservatives on the court are like, maybe we should take another look at that.
You can sue anonymously, right? You can sue as Jane Doe. You can sue as Jane Roe. This is how we got Roe versus Wade. So yes, it is possible for pregnant people to bring lawsuits and to do so anonymously. But we're now in 2019, not in 1974. We're also in a world where abortion, anti-abortion protesters and advocates are really, really virulently, nastily, hatefully anti-choice. So what pregnant person is going to want to step up and be like, hey, I'll be the face of this lawsuit? And even if it's true that I can sue anonymously, there are people who would just love to dox me, would love to figure out who I am in my community. If I live in a small rural town, it's going to be pretty impossible to hide the fact that I'm the pregnant person that is seeking an abortion and that is filing a lawsuit. I mean, there's a reason, there's a practical reason that providers have been able to sue on behalf of their patients, because it's providers who are going to have to come up against these laws again and again and again and again, right? Yep. Whereas a pregnant person, probably not planning on having an abortion in the first instance. And when you are pregnant and seeking an abortion, you're probably not thinking, well, let me go ahead and keep this lawsuit going because I might need another abortion at some time in the future. And then look, I could go back to this lawsuit that I filed and rely on that ruling. I mean, it's absurd. And again, I need to point out that one of the reasons why we let abortion providers sue is because abortion providers are injured. Like, they have an injury that a court can redress. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the point of standing. Standing requires a person to sue who has an injury that can be redressed by the court. A pregnant person, by the time a piece of litigation is drawing to a close, that pregnant person is no longer pregnant.
Yep.
Because lawsuits take 3 or 4 years, pregnancies last 9 or 10 months. So we've got this problem where pregnant people are suddenly not going to be able to sue, or they will be able to sue using this legal jurisprudential theory called capable of repetition but evading review, which means that that person could get pregnant again, but they're not going to remain pregnant for the lawsuit. So it's just going to go cyclical, right? It's just...
Right.
It's a lot.
It is so much.
It's a lot to handle, and it's very frustrating. And it's, as you said, it's radical. This is something we've not dealt with before. And the fact that the court is actually considering it means that we're in a really scary time for abortion rights.
Yeah, it means that there are at least 4 votes on the court right now that would consider upending this principle entirely. And so, I want to drive home another point, because you're right about the practical realities of just trying to navigate a lawsuit at this. But when we talk about trap laws and the impact, for example, and who do they fall on? Who bears that burden the most? And those are communities that are already struggling to have access to health care. So what the court conservatives are saying is that you are a person who is vulnerable people, you will also need to go beg a federal court to enforce your rights individually. So you will need to have the means and the wherewithal to do that. That means we are putting the burden on individuals already in a difficult situation to then have to go. I mean, everybody is effectively a juvenile seeking a judicial bypass at that point, as far as the court is concerned. And that's a terrifying place for us to be at any point in time, but especially 2019. And because this isn't just could providers then not be able to sue on behalf of their patients in trap laws, we don't know what this limiting principle is. Could providers then not be able to sue on behalf of their patients to block unconstitutional 6-week bans like we're seeing in Georgia, for example? How far does this reach? We won't know until this summer, and I'm scared.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. The days of sugarcoating it are just long over. We're now, and we've entered the national nightmare, and Jess and I are just going to give it to you straight. It sucks.
It's rough. We should probably explain to the listeners what happens next.
I'm going to let you do that because I'm just going to silent scream over here. I can't.
While Imani is silent screaming, I'll give you the breakdown real quick. So the court agreed to hear the case today. They've got cases scheduled all the way through December right now on the calendar. So it's not likely that we'll get oral arguments on this case until maybe January or February. They consolidated both of the issues. So the question of whether or not the admitting privileges law is constitutional and the question of third party standing, they consolidated them. So they'll hear them together for oral arguments for 1 hour. So advocates will have a total of 1 hour completely to convince the court that Act 620 is bullshit and that abortion providers should still have the ability to sue on behalf of their patients. And then because it's a big case and it's the court and they love drama, we probably won't get a decision until the end of June.
Yeah. This is going to be another one of those Hobby Lobby years. Those Hobby Lobby years, those Obergefell years, the years where we have those really, really big civil rights cases, human rights cases, and we just have to sit for the next 9 to 10 months and just wait to see what John Roberts decides to do, because he's our swing vote now. And isn't that grand?
At least we'll get you through it all, listeners. We promise.
Whiskey and boom lawyered. It's all you need going forward. So we're going to wrap this up.
We'll have more coverage of this case and what it means at rewire.news. So be sure to check that out. Go to the Facebook group, right, Imani?
Yeah, Facebook. Yep. Facebook. Answer the questions. I'm just sort of like, whatever. Facebook, Twitter, Angry Black Lady, you know, you can find Jess. She's at Hegemommy. You can spell that if you want. It's H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. It's Hegemommy, not Hegemony. You know, good times. Whatever. We'll just see you on the tubes. I'm going to go have a drink.
See you on the tubes, folks. Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason-Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer, and the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.